There's been high praise for Malcolm Turnbull today from a most unlikely quarter. The official historian of the British Security Service, MI5, says Turnbull's brilliant handling of the defence case in the Spycatcher trial was the catalyst for much-needed intelligence reforms. In 1986, Mr. Turnbull was the counsel for Peter Wright, a former MI5 officer. The British government was trying to prevent the publication of Mr. Wright's book, Spycatcher. The book alleged that the former head of MI5, Sir Roger Hollis, had been a KGB agent. That gave the story an extra Australian dimension because Sir Roger Hollis was one of the people instrumental in setting up the Australian intelligence service, ASIO, in the 50s. Now, the intelligence historian Professor Christopher Andrew, who was given access to 400,000 MI5 files in the course of several years' work on his official history of the service, says he's proved conclusively that Sir Roger was not a double agent and that Peter Wright was misguided at best. He spoke to me from London.
Sir Roger Hollis was not merely not a Soviet agent. He was one of the people who was least likely to have been a Soviet agent in the whole of MI5. What had simply happened is that Peter Wright, after a fairly competent early career, became embittered. He became a conspiracy theorist. He got it into his head that Hollis was guilty. And as my book shows, he actually went to the extent of manufacturing evidence against him. He no doubt thought that it was in the right cause. But if you look at the records, and he could have looked at the records, but he either did and paid no attention to them or didn't look at them. It's actually Hollis during the Second World War who is a Cold War warrior before there is a Cold War, and what he's doing cannot be interpreted as cover. He's the man who, more than anybody else, is in the MI5 leadership, is arguing, look, we mustn't stop keeping track of what the Russians are up to. We mustn't stop keeping track of the names and other details of members of the British Communist Party. So he was completely innocent. Peter Wright was a tremendous fraud. Whatever evidence he got hold of, once he became obsessed by the belief that Sir Roger Hollis was working for the KGB, he would just twist it to his own purposes. I mean, it all ends up. It's one of those cases, it seems to me, in which nobody comes out of it, at least in Britain, with credit. Her Majesty's government has never made a bigger fool of itself in Australia than during the Spycatcher trial in 1987. No, I think, retired British intelligence officer has ever produced such a preposterous account of British intelligence history as Peter Wright. It was an extraordinary farce.
There was a man in the American intelligence system called James Jesus Angleton who became so obsessed with the idea of bluff, double bluff, triple bluff and so forth that he got lost, that the phrase was a wilderness of mirrors. Was Wright like that?
Oh, absolutely. One of the worst things that can happen to any intelligence service is to have a conspiracy theorist. The damage that they can do is simply enormous because, of course, it's extremely disruptive of what is going on within that service. It's also extremely disruptive of relations with their intelligence allies. So, you know, particular humiliation for Harold Macmillan. At the very time when he's attempting to form a special relationship, which surprisingly he did, with the young and dynamic President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, he has to tell Kennedy that Hollis's deputy, who fell under suspicion before Hollis, Graham Mitchell, is being investigated on suspicion of being a Soviet agent. Now, there are not many greater humiliations, I think, than can happen to a British Prime Minister in intelligence relationships with other powers than that.
And back on the Spycatcher trial, as you know, the man who defended Peter Wright's right to publish is now the leader of the opposition in Australia. Was Malcolm Turnbull right to do what he did?
Well, Malcolm Turnbull was representing his client, and he did an absolutely brilliant job, which included the public humiliation of Sir Robert Armstrong, the British Cabinet Secretary. In fact, Sir Robert Armstrong was an extremely able individual, but you remember he was given an absolutely impossible brief. And Malcolm Turnbull tore it apart at the age of, what was he at the time? 29? Anyway, very young.
32, I think.
With extraordinary forensic skill. I mean, anybody who paid attention to the trial as I did at the time, I was perfectly clear that Turnbull had an exceptional career ahead of him in some way. You know, I remember that questions went a bit like this. I mean, one of the absurdities at the time was that even though everybody knew that Britain had a Foreign Intelligence Service, SIS, government officials were not allowed to admit it. Australian government officials were, of course, allowed to admit that ASIS was around. So Turnbull put this point to poor Sir Robert Armstrong, and Robert Armstrong refused to acknowledge that SIS existed. Turnbull then went on to point out to Sir Robert Armstrong that he had already admitted that Sir Dick White had been head of SIS, the British SIS, for over a decade, at which point Sir Robert Armstrong was forced to reply, "Oh, well, I can't admit that SIS existed before Dick White became its head, and I can't admit it existed after Dick White became his head." So, you know, I don't think that British senior officialdom has ever suffered or is ever likely to suffer such humiliation as it suffered at the hands of Malcolm Turnbull in the New South Wales Supreme Court.
What lessons did it learn?
What lessons it learned is that it couldn't possibly go on like that. One of the things that we tend to forget nowadays is that MI5, of which, of course, Peter Wright had been a rogue member, didn't even have a clear statutory basis. So in 1989, the Security Service Act is passed, and ever since then, MI5 has been governed by statute. And then, secondly, I mean, even though it's been a long and winding path, I think that there was a gradual realization that the only alternative to having nonsense history of the kind that Peter Wright was peddling was to allow for the publication of reasonably reliable history. So in 1997, exactly a decade after the Spycatcher trial, MI5 started releasing its earliest records, and nowadays it has something like an informal 50-year rule for most of its records. And then, of course, 5-6 years later, it decided on the publication of an authorized history, getting in an outside historian, that's me, giving me virtually unrestricted access to its archives, not, of course, giving me the right to publish all of them, but I did have access to virtually all of them, and celebrating its 100th birthday with a history of its first 100 years. Even though I have a very, very low opinion of Peter Wright, to be honest, I think he did me a favor. And in other words, if it hadn't been for his nonsense history of MI5, I might not have got the opportunity to write what I hope is a reasonably reliable history of MI5.
Professor Christopher Andrew of Cambridge University, whose book is The Defence of the Realm, The Authorised History of MI5. And for those with an interest in espionage and the Australian history of the 1950s, there'll be a 20-minute version of that interview on our website tonight, focusing on the defection of Vladimir and Evdokia Petrov, as well as the Spycatcher trial.